the Supreme Court with a couple of rulings yesterday.
Yeah.
We want to talk about those with Teresa Marshant Shapiro, professor of poli-sci at Southern Connecticut State University. Tess, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
We're good. Thanks for taking a few minutes to be with us. The story that's gotten the most publicity is the Supreme Court's decision that would require the Electoral College members to vote for the candidate for whom their state elected. When did this kind of go off the rails?
The case? I mean, it's been going off the rails in the entire history of the United States.
Yeah.
Originally, the Electoral College was designed with the thought that voters didn't know about the people of reputation that should be elected president, and so it was delegated to some elite that would know who had the best character and most able to govern. The trick is that the country became partisan in nature, and we wanted to be able to control who was elected president. So there have been increasing restrictions on how those electors get chosen.
So if I go back in time then, it was supposed to be the best and the brightest. There would be appointed, they were going to be electors. And did actually how the state happened to vote, the constituents, those people, how did they have any say at all?
Initially, it was mostly the state legislators that would choose the electors in the Electoral College. So, no, they had a say in who they sent to the state house, but nothing beyond that.
Okay.
So, with yesterday's decision by the Supreme Court, now when we get to November and we vote, when the Electoral College members, when the eight in our state, Electoral College voters go to vote, they have to vote for whoever won the popular election, right?
Well, it depends by state.
Right.
So
yes.
There are 15 states where they really can vote for whoever they want. 35 states make the electors take a pledge beforehand saying
right.
that they will vote for whoever the party
right.
has nominated that wins that state. And there's a smaller group of states that have restrictions on those electors so that they break their pledge. They can either be replaced or be fined.
At this point, when it comes to sending electors to the college to vote and all that, it's been winner take all, except I think there are a couple of states that actually go by, I think, congressional district. I think Maine is one of them. So
yeah,
if they,
Maine and Nebraska.
Yeah, it was Nebraska. So in other words, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a unified block. I mean, and which in a way is a really good thing, I think.
That it doesn't have to be a block?
Well, that in fact, you know, let's say you're living in California, which is overwhelmingly Democratic. It just is. But there are vast areas of it, not so by population, but by area, that are, in fact, Republican. I mean, you get to Fresno, places like that. But, you know, basically, I guess the point is, why in the hell should I vote? Because it ain't going to make any difference.
Well, and a Republican in Connecticut, the same thing, right?
Yeah.
So the interesting thing is that it was the states that had decided to do a winner-take-all in all the states except Maine and Nebraska. And it just depends on the state legislature on how they do that. In those states, what happens is that the two electors that are, you know, taking the place of the senators, they go with whoever wins the majority in the state, and then each congressional district gets to choose who their elector goes for. And it certainly is a more democratic approach to choosing and stays within the confines of the Electoral College. The question really is, do we want to have the Electoral College at all?
Yeah,
or do we
right.
want to have a general popular election for president.
So if I'm hearing you right, though, states can still say to the members of their electoral college and say, yeah, you can vote for whoever you want.
You bet. And
so what's the, so what
can,
so
it can still happen.
So what's the significance of yesterday then?
So the significance in yesterday is that it allows the state legislatures to pass laws that are more constraining on those electors.
Right.
And so you could have those kinds of laws that happened in Washington and Colorado that were the two cases yesterday. Those, it is now determined, are legal so that more states could pass them saying you really do have to vote for the person that the state votes for.
You know, one of the people who's really behind a movement that has been going on, I don't know how many states have signed on to this, but it's the National Popular Vote. I know Denise Merrill is. What exactly would that do?
So that pledges the states, you know, each of the states who do it, saying that if all of the states in the country will pledge to send their electors to whoever wins the national popular vote,
okay,
then it kicks in so that all of a sudden it's not each state determining which electors get sent, it's the entire country. The trick is you've got to have all the states in the country signing on to that.
Talking with Teresa Marchant Shapiro, professor of political science at Southern Connecticut State, about yesterday's Supreme Court decision that states can require members of the Electoral College to vote for the candidate for whom their state elected. Of the states that do not have this in effect now, do we have an idea like what those states are, and do we think that's ever going to change? In those states, or are those states going to, I mean, especially coming up to this election,
right,
which you know, could be the most controversial election ever held, which is hard to say in this country because we've had so many of them. But,
true,
you know, those 17 or 18 states, do we think that those states in particular are going to go by the lay of the law, or just say, you know, go rogue?
The electors?
The electors, yeah. Yeah.
So they could, and that's the funny thing about Kagan's decision is they're expecting, actually, I guess all of the Supreme Court justices were expecting some kind of chaos this year if they said, oh, it's okay for electors to go rogue. But in the history of the U.S., that really hasn't happened. And so it was said at almost, it seems like a straw man saying that we're going to have all of these electors who are being bribed or somehow
right,
lobbied illicitly to try and get them to vote for someone they get paid off or whatever to vote. But it's never happened before. And so it's almost like a solution in search of a problem.
Let's say back when this thing was first originated, that being the concept of the Electoral College. My guess is, and I think the president was installed in March or something like that, as I recall. But the whole point was part of it, there was no way of really knowing what the national popular vote was. And so you sent the electors. It was the electors who picked the president representing whoever it is in their state.
I don't know that that's true, that they couldn't have known.
Okay.
You still can count the votes and still couldn't count.
I guess
count
so. Them. Well, it's a nice ritual. What the heck?
It is a nice ritual.
Give somebody a trip to Washington. What are you going to do?
Hey, for this coming election, when do states have to, let's say the states that don't go by this, when do they have to change their, you know, and if they want to make sure that their Electoral College members vote for the winner of the popular vote? Is there a deadline that those states have to change their rules by?
Well, the electors meet in the states during December, and so any laws would have to be passed before December. I can't imagine that there would be any reason that it couldn't be implemented immediately. So, you know, I would say it probably could even go into November and still have it in effect for that December meeting of the electors.
Okay. All right. Well, Tess, thanks for clearing things up and muddying them a little bit, too. So
it's not easy, is it?
Thank you. Teresa Marchant Shapiro from Southern Connecticut State.
Well, that was good. That's you're right, though. It's confusing
just, you know,
to me.
It's crazy.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.